Insurance is probably one of the most competitive and difficult businesses to be in. It's a push category still in India, and the lack of education doesn't help the cause. Only once a year will the customer actively we want to be touch base with, and that is at renewal. God forbid they go through a medical emergency or a tragedy. The way the insurance company handles and services the customer is what will determine if they stay or don't. Otherwise, there's always a competitor ready with their telecallers to poach anyone a loyal customer. In this episode of the State of Data and Marketing podcast of Common Threads, we're tying together two conversations, the ones that I had in 2023. One is with Max Life Insurance and the other with Edelweiss Tokyo Life. Now, we'd speak to Max's D2C head Samir Jain and Edelweiss's CMO Mr. Abhishek Gupta. This is episode 45, tune in. First, let's understand the insurance landscape in India from both these leaders and their views of the market.
Would be super helpful if you just set the landscape of the insurance industry. Let's just focus on life because that's what you're doing. You're a marketer, you've been a salesperson, you've sold loans before. But now from a marketing lens, you were just talking to me about how the category has its position in India now. COVID changed a few things, but not a lot. So let's just put that landscape together.
So overall, if I see the life insurance industry has right now 26. About 27 players.
Okay.
It is an industry where there's an extreme example of polarization that we can see. Almost out of these 27 players, almost 50% of the market is with one single player.
Right. Okay. Of course.
And that single player, of course, LIC.
Everybody knows.
The industry is synonymous with LIC.
Sure.
So it's an industry where 50% market share is with one player. And the entire other part of the industry is called as private life insurance industry. So LIC and private life insurance industry.
1 and 26.
Yes. Out of the entire share available to private life insurance industry, the top three players, SBI Life, HDFC Life, and ICICI Pru, take away almost 50% of that market.
Okay.
Okay. Now you do the math.
Yep. So we're left with 25% between 24 people.
Between 24 okay. players. And then you have the second level of large players, which is Bajaj Allianz, Max Life, Tata AIA. So even the 25% which is left, the lion's share goes to these 3-4 players. So I leave it to you and the viewers to and the listeners to decide what is the market share available to each of the smaller players.
Sure, but India's a 100.
But that is what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Even at that level, even at that market share, the market potential is huge. The demographics of the country work very favorably for our category.
Hmm.
This coupled with the fact that the disposable incomes are increasing, the younger population is earning more and more. And more important part is the savings are getting financialized.
Okay.
Because earlier savings used to be either in real estate or in bank FDs.
Or perhaps gold.
Yeah. Now what is happening is gradually people are exploring alternate ways of financializing their savings.
Fair.
So therefore, we see the how we are seeing mutual funds, how they are growing. We are seeing the number of SIPs. They are increasing every month. Insurance or life insurance, what we believe is the basics of financial planning.
Sure.
Because first you take care of your protection needs. And then you move into your savings needs. And then you move into your investment needs. And then you
Fair
move
enough.
Into wealth management kind of. That's the hierarchy. So insurance comes at the base of the financial planning. But that is the protection part. What insurance also offers is a way to create long-term wealth through products which offer a blend of guaranteed and non-guaranteed plays. And obviously, insurance also gives an opportunity to participate in the market through ULIPs. Yes, all of these products obviously come with an insurance element to it. So a lot of customers' investments have started moving into these new financial products.
Got it.
So coupled with all of these, if you see, there is a tremendous potential for the industry. And therefore, we believe that there is enough room to grow. To give you a counter example, a small country like Thailand, will have close to 40-45 life insurance.
Okay, and they're all thriving, surviving.
They are all thriving, surviving, making money.
Okay.
And actually doing great for the country.
So interesting.
I think we still have a room for more players in there.
So insurance has become a relatively competitive space now, in my impression. And there is a lot of, let's say, aggregator play that's also playing out, which is, I'm assuming, driving a part of the business. So in your case, what does the play look like in terms of acquisition? How aggressive do you go? How competitively do you play? What kind of market share do you probably claim? And, what are the different products within insurance that you are expecting to focus on or sharpening your spends on?
Okay, so yes, you were right in mentioning that aggregators have changed the space completely, and that's why that's when online business started growing significantly. Term insurance was the dominant product for the longest time because it was a vanilla product, easily understood by consumers. It didn't have many hidden clauses, which you need somebody face to face explaining the nuances of the product, and hence that was the dominant product for the longest time. But now there are savings-led insurance products that have now started picking up. Two dominant categories: one where you get guaranteed returns, and another where you get market-linked returns along with insurance.
Sure.
So yeah, all three are now picking up. And the space is quite heated. The competition is very intense. Most brands are not only looking to maximize their share on the aggregator platform, they're also wanting to build their own muscle on their own website, because they understand that the brand plays an important role in this space, because it's insurance is a long-term contract, right? When you buy insurance from an organization, you'll be there for 40 years, 50 years. And hence, the brand plays a significant role.
Sure. So, and this is still a massively expanding category in some sense, right? So all the aggression that's going into marketing, is that meaningfully helping expand category, or is there a lot of market share grabbing already happening in terms of just shifting, trying to shift people from one brand to the other?
It depends on year to year. So the 2 years of COVID, there was significant surge that the category witnessed in terms of consumer intent.
Sure.
But last year, post-COVID, the consumer intent went down. And it was expected also, because demand for certain industries is cyclical in nature. And obviously, we maxed out during the 2 years of COVID. So there was, it had to correct somewhere. Mm-hmm. So if I was to specifically talk about last year, it was mostly about grabbing more market share for most players, because the overall pie wasn't expanding. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in a 4 year to 5 year CAGR frame, the industry is growing at 30 to 40% year on year.
It's quite healthy.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, it's one of the good growth spaces in that sense compared to a lot of other spaces. 30 to 40% CAGR sounds great. Abhishek from Edelweiss sees India's insurance scene as ripe for more players to dive in, while Sameer points out that the competition is already heated up. Perhaps both are correct in their own assessments. But let's understand their strategies. Are they charging in headfirst or playing it easy?
I'm going to ask you a very classic marketer question. You could either differentiate from a market segment lens, okay, this is the set of people we were going after because there is, let's say, different spaces available for different people, or a different need or a different positioning or a different service level. What is it that you're kind of going after?
So one thing very clear, and since I've given you the industry ka overall picture, and we are a challenger brand.
Sure.
Although if I had Koyal Mulse hand on heart, probably challenger, maybe challenger honge, so we will be that kind of a player currently. Consciously, we have decided that we will not go into the markets, or we will not go after the segments where I have to create a need for insurance.
People already know insurance.
So we will go after people. We will target people who already have a fair bit of understanding of insurance, have a fair bit of disposable income available to them, and in geographies where insurance penetration is already at a little higher rate. For that, cutoff is 20% for us.
So in some sense, you don't want to be the first policy somebody buys.
You might be the first policy somebody buys, but you need to be a person who understands insurance.
Fair enough.
Yes. So that is the kind of market
we will
go after.
So you'll not do a lot of category creation, so to speak, because there's enough 75% market share with somebody who will do it.
Actually, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
If I decide to focus on category creation, and that is the basic principle in category creation, if you try to create a category, in a category which already exists, then the benefit will always go to the top players.
That's right? Yeah. So the more people buy insurance, 75% of them will buy with somebody else.
Yeah, so if I go to a market and try to create a match there, probably people will start getting warming up to the idea of buying insurance, but then they'll first go to the large players.
So in some sense, the market share situation, this is a static situation that as of now what it looks like. But I'm sure on the incremental basis of whatever new policies are getting sold on an yearly basis, these numbers might look different. Because you're growing at a certain pace.
Oh, yeah. We are growing. In fact, we are growing faster than that.
Absolutely.
Our CAGR, if I see since our inception, we are a 14-year-old company.
Right.
Has been close to 45% when the market has grown by 10-12%. So that has been our growth.
So you've been consistently gaining market share.
We have been gaining market share, but gaining market share in a qualitative.
Sure.
Because it's very easy for me to go out and sell policies to the customers, but ultimately we sell a product which lasts with the consumer for 10-20 years. I need to ensure that the consumer keeps on coming back and paying me every year. If I'm able to retain a healthy, what we call as a persistency,
right,
which is the number of customers who are coming back and paying every year, I see that as a quality business.
Given the nature of competition and given that the CACs slash the bids on Google will always remain crazy, how do you navigate this? Are you like grow super aggressively kind of mindset or no, more calibrated, controlled kind of approach?
No, we want to grow aggressively, we want to grow faster than the market. But we've realized that we cannot continue to sustain our growth only focusing on acquisition. Because as you rightly said, the cost of media will continue to become more expensive. And hence, we have to figure out the entire funnel. We have a fair understanding of the full funnel for the customer. How do we ensure that our buying journey is the most friction-free compared to others in the market?
Sure.
We not only benchmark ourselves to the other brands, we also benchmark ourselves to the aggregator. And I think our target is to provide a more seamless buying experience.
Sure.
Than even on the aggregator website.
You kind of preempted my next question. So you mentioned the whole full funnel. You can buy traffic, but beyond that, everything is in your control. So maybe let's just break down your funnel, Sameer, in terms of what typically happens as a first aware consumer discovers you, or maybe you're doing awareness efforts, and then there is consideration, and then there is conversion. So, you know, what is your funnel, and what does your user journey look like?
So, because of the category, it's not a very pull-led category, and we have to do a lot of work at the top of the funnel stage. Because buying insurance is a latent need. Most people postpone this in their lives and don't think that it's an important decision early on in their lives. However, now they've started to realize the later you push this, the more expensive it'll get. And also, it's in the early part of your years that your liability is the highest, right? When you turn 50, 60, there are not too many dependents that you have, right?
Yeah.
So it's a decision that you ought to take early on in your life. So a lot of work is done on creating top of the funnel. And usually...
both sides here, sorry, just to expand this bit. Top of the funnel could be about brand or could be about the category. And how do you kind of allocate attention to these two? Because everyone's trying to create the category and you're trying to create the category plus also a preference for your brand.
Yeah, so the focus is on, I'd say, generating a funnel for the business.
Of course.
The brand consideration and awareness is an offshoot of what we do.
Okay.
So, while we continue to focus on maximizing ROI of whatever money we deploy, increasingly we've figured out that there are certain... avenues, certain channels, certain placements where the impact on brand is also significant.
Sure.
Right? So we try and maximize
and
both.
That's measured using those brand metrics kind of awareness preference surveys.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So we try and do a bit of both because the way the industry operates, it marketing dollars come as a part of the revenue that you do.
Sure.
Right. It's still not a very brand-led category.
Yeah.
And hence, we have to do justice to both.
Fair enough. It's absolutely fascinating to hear two leaders, each steering a different ship within the same industry, charting vastly divergent courses. Now, on to understanding how a customer's online purchase behavior for an insurance product works at Max Life. Let's hear it from Sameer. So we talk about the buyer journey and the funnel, how it plays out. So you have some places where you've discovered that the branding is also getting a bit of a boost while you're still getting your ROI from whatever traffic you're generating from those sources, right? So, you know, let's just say there is an example platform X from where somebody has discovered it and they've now become traffic for you. So they've come to your interfaces. How does the journey flow from there? What are the different interfaces where you enter people from and how do they go in from there?
So, as I mentioned, primarily we have two product lines, term insurance and savings / investment led plans. So we run separate campaigns for both. Irrespective of whether it's term or savings, you usually land on a lead page because as a category, we are hungry for leads. And the first step that we want a user to do is to fill in their name, phone number, give their date of birth, gender, and so on. And then they get on to the buying journey where they will decide what plan works for them best.
It's still happening on the web interface. So somebody slid in ad, come to a landing page, filled up a lead form,
yes,
which has a bunch of form fields, which you're trying to make the most of in terms of information you need.
Yes.
From there, they get to a choice of plans,
yes,
which would have a certain level. It's kind of the catalog page for
correct
an e-commerce platform.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. So they select what plan works for them best, and then you can add riders to your plan, and then eventually you make payment. And post you make the payment, there's a long proposal form because there are a lot of information that we need to capture, right, in terms of your KYC, your financial, your address, and your own declarations about your health and so on. So it's a fairly lengthy form. After that, you know, every policy goes for decisioning. So we don't issue a policy to everybody who wants to buy from us. Everybody's case goes through checks where we check their financial background, we check their medical background. Sometimes we do medical tests for these consumers, and eventually a policy is issued. So it's a fairly
long... Payment happens before the long the policy document plus the test and approval process. The payment actually happens before that.
Yes. The only reason for that is because... the proposal form is fairly long, and
you don't want to drop off there.
If we were to make them fill the proposal form before they make the payment, 50% of our funnel would be wiped off.
But so, this is something that you've switched recently, or has this always been the
case? It's something which the industry is following for the last 4 or 5 years. They've realized that that bit of friction is something that we cannot eliminate. We have to live with it, and hence we take the payment first up.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I would imagine this to be very similar to how a Big Basket or a Lenskart process the order, and after that they ask for, so the order is confirmed. Now you can pay in whatever fashion in Big Basket, and the order is confirmed on a Lenskart, and you can now put your power afterwards.
Correct.
So if you were to do it before, obviously there's going to be a funnel drop off. So this seems to be a, you know, somewhat smart thing to do to me to kind of reduce that funnel drop off. But now zooming into the steps where you still would see funnel drop offs, right? You had the guy coming into the platform, filling up the form. Is there a kind of metric on the form fill rate that you're watching actively, because that's a large part of what your spend looks like? And maybe there are some experiments to improve that number that you might have done and seen some success with.
Yeah, it's the funnel is still a very leaky funnel. To answer your question, let's say if you generate 100 leads, only 4 or 5 of them make a payment eventually, right? So it's there's a...
Yeah, that's still not bad, huh? It's 100 leads. So what would be the form fill rate if there's an indicator there?
Form fill rate is same as leads, right?
So out of the clicks, the number
You're saying out of, so click to lead would be about another 20%.
Sure. So 20% click to lead, and then lead to payment
is about 4%. 4 to 5%.
Wow, that's some sharpness.
Yes. So it's a lot of funnel drop. There are various reasons for it.
Sure.
One of the reasons is that there's a lot of information asymmetry in insurance specifically, right? It's not easily understood by everyone. And as an industry, we tend to use a lot of jargon. And the more time you spend in this industry, the more comfortable you get with the with those jargon, then you feel that, you know, it's something that a user would naturally understand. For instance, we use critical illness as one of the propositions that we give. It's not something which is easily understood by a layman.
Sure.
So that is one thing that we have to actively work on. The second is our TG is very sharp. And we don't get very deterministic signals on whether on Google or on Meta or any other advertising platforms to be able to sharply target our audience. For instance, we need somebody who's a graduate and above. We need somebody who's filing an ITR of 5 lakh and above, and so on. So there are a couple of other age cuts and all. And hence...
But you're not able to do these cuts on the current advertising platforms that you spend money
on. We do this to our best of our ability.
To the extent you can, sure.
Yeah, but there's still about 30 to 40% of the funnel is unaddressable. Of the leads that we generate are unaddressable. And that's an ongoing struggle that we have.
Imagine only 5 people buying insurance out of 100 leads. Tough, right? But that's in reality the insurance industry. Between regulations, jargon, form fills, and actually buying policies, both providers and customers lose a lot of money and patience. But what happens after a customer buys it? What happens when it's time for renewal? What metrics are insurance providers looking at? I'll let Abhishek answer that for us.
So you've been at it for the last 5 years. The insurance business has been around for a little longer. So from that lens of persistency as a key metric of judging the quality of what you've got, how does that, let's say, affect your operational strategy on also from marketer's lens? Because there is a certain amount of energy you want to put in making sure there is persistence. And obviously, you have to help keep selling new insurance as well. How do you split these two worlds?
What we try to do is, number one is there are 2-3 metrics for persistency that we track. The first metric is the 13th month persistency. The reason we call it the 13th month is because the consumer buys a policy for a year. And every year, the policy needs to be renewed.
Sure.
you might decide to renew in quarterly mode or in semi-annually mode or an annually mode, but still it's a policy year.
Sure.
So the way industries or the company's health is measured is 13th month persistency when you renew it for the second year. Then the next metric is a 25th month persistency. Then 37th, and then we go to 50th month persistency, which is 49th.
Sure. Yeah. So every year,
and then 64th.
There's a chance of leakage.
If the customer has sustained with a policy for 3-4 years, more or less the customer will continue the policy.
Are you able to tell us what that looks like in terms of?
I cannot tell you the numbers.
Ballparks, indicatively.
So typically, a good persistency number would be north of 80%.
And would the industry benchmark would be somewhere there?
Around that. Industry has been fairly. So most of the industry circulates between 80-85% of the 13th month persistency.
Fair enough. So all of this market share battle that will happen, do they happen at the first level or people move around all the time?
It happens at what we call as the first year premium. The first year. The first time you're acquiring a customer, the entire battle is played over there.
Sure.
The health of the industry in terms of the growth of the industry is always measured in new year premium. In that particular year, what are new customers you have enrolled and what is the value of their time?
So for market is attention span, that's kind of where you are.
For our attention span, we call it APE, Annualized Premium Equivalent. That is the holy grail.
The key metric.
The key metric that we focus, other than obviously the quality parameters.
It's very interesting. So, you know, on the one side, you have this whole persistency situation where there is leakage and people getting into other. What happens? Do they just stop paying one guy and they start paying another guy by buying a new insurance ones? Or they go out of the insurance fold altogether. They would stay in the insurance fold.
Two reasons. Number one is this person who's currently bought policy from one of the companies. Somebody else has approached this person and convinced this person that the policy that you bought was not very adequate or was not the right product for you. Why don't you buy my policy? So whatever money you're putting over there, start putting in over here and they are able to convince the customer. That's the
Okay.
So that's probably the when customer actually moves around within the players in the industry, but still is in within the category.
It's covered.
Yeah. Second situation when happens when the customer has a financial problem.
Okay.
Insurance still you need to pay a premium.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because of the financial problems, you have immediate pressing needs. And insurance suddenly is something that, what is insurance? Ultimately, it's a piece of paper.
Yeah.
That I as a life insurer has given you as a customer. Saying that if something happens to you, I'll take care.
Yeah.
So that promise, while yes, it is very important, but for customers in immediate pressing financial need, they say, okay, let me put this on the side. And so these kind of customers
actually lapse
due to their own financial situation.
Mm.
And third kind of lapsation purely happens when consumers forget to pay. They don't realize because they would have also many times insurance is bought out of obligation.
Oh, okay. So my relationship manager needs his targets to be met.
No, it is not so much of obligation. Then it is not so much of obligation. Mm-hmm. It is my relative who has become an insurance agent.
Mm.
And relative comes to me and said, hey, please, ye policy le lijiye, ye wo. I end up buying from that. And, you know, it is very interesting point. Whenever a new person comes and becomes an insurance advisor,
right?
We call it the circles. Okay. The first port of call or the first circle is always the natural circle. Where this person will go to his friends, family, acquaintances, and relatives and start selling insurance.
Sure.
Okay. And most of these people who are buying, this is obligation buying.
They lapse.
And most of these policies, if not sold properly, if not serviced properly, they will lapse.
Sure.
The problem starts coming for this guy when he starts moving out of his natural circle. So initially, this person realizes ki here insurance is not easy. Okay.
Yeah.
Then the natural circle gets over. That's when the real selling comes in.
Mm.
You have to find customers, you have to convince them, and you have to convert them.
And you see this in data and you see this in patterns, and you know this is an obligation. I mean, when he bought for the first time, you kind of know that this is an obligation.
No, it's actually now, it's very difficult. It's very difficult to find out whether it was an obligation sale or not, unless and until you have a data capture mechanism in place where we are able to track it as an obligation thing. So what we try to do is, we try to do it the other way. We look at the first few policies of every advisor.
Sure. Yeah, that's a fair proxy.
Every advisor who comes in, then we try to say these are obligatory customers. Then we have, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, we have our models running.
Sure.
Analytics and machine learning models, which actually give us which customers have a propensity to lapse.
Right.
The moment we have that code of the customer, we go after them on a dedicated basis, be in touch with them so that they keep on paying.
So automatically, this so-called proxy to obligation is new bias from the first advisor.
First time advisor.
And then those guys get a slightly different treatment as a
more rigorous follow-up from
more rigorous, so because you don't want them to lapse. But the lapse regardless, I mean, obviously
depends
there's a percentage,
the
of course.
The customer,
there's a percentage always.
Or it is quite also happens is, you know, there is also a huge attrition in the industry.
So the advisors.
The advisor moves on to the next company and he says, okay, wo jaane to, ye nahi aata. So it's the next level of obligation now.
Understanding a potential customer and their needs is a significant aspect of selling insurance, whether it's digitally through Google Ads or in person via an agent. Let's delve into the potential buyers and need analysis strategy at Max Life Insurance and the user psyche that Edelweiss Tokyo applies to segment their teaching.
Depending on what was your search keyword or depending on which creative you clicked on, as I mentioned, there's a theme that we pass as part of the URL of the campaign. And this is that theme, the landing page is customized. That is one thing that we do. The second big thing is, as you mentioned, somebody coming from search is an intent user, whereas somebody coming from display could just be exploring. And hence, we assume that if you're coming from display and this is your first visit to the website, even though you're clicking on, let's say, a term insurance creative, or you're clicking on a term insurance with money back creative or term insurance with critical illness creative, we assume that the intent is not clear. And ideally, we've not done it yet, but we want to do some sort of a need analysis for this user rather than making him fill the lead form directly. So that's an experiment that we're doing right now as we speak. Because we feel that, you know, this is a noise that we get from our sales also, that a lot of these leads, when we call them or talk to them, they'll say, okay, we don't know why we were here for, we just landed accidentally. And hence, it's important to understand what life stage are they in, what is top of mind for them, and why is term insurance important for them, if at all.
Sure.
We offer other products also on the website. So it, it's quite possible that you clicked on a term insurance creative, but you end up buying something else from us. So we have to keep that conversation open, at least for folks coming from display.
Sorry, so you said the display folks come in for term insurance. They've clicked an ad for term insurance essentially, but they ended up buying something else.
Yes.
But where does the discovery of that something else happen? Because if he's landing on a lead form, this is supposed to have a specific buyer journey, right? So, I mean, at what point does he navigate out of this buyer journey into something else?
So the, what we've done already is for folks coming from display, we have a toggle in the lead form where they can select between whether they want to buy term or they want to buy savings investment. This is working for users who still know what a term product is and what a savings slash investment product is. But a large audience would not even know the difference between the two. And hence, what I was saying is that we want to do a need analysis for this set of users before they even get into the either the term buying journey or the savings.
You know, so one of the things that maybe we do on the B2B side of things is to understand the top of the funnel actually does not land on a lead form, it lands on content.
Correct.
So you just educate the users more and more about the subject.
Correct.
Is this something you've considered, experimented, done anything?
We have. We have experimented within the past because, again, the hypothesis was that even if they read one paragraph of what is it that we are offering or what is term insurance, they are more likely to be engaged and more qualified user going forward.
The intent gets stronger in some sense.
Yes, but the session to lead dipped. I think if it was, let's say, 30%, it dipped to about 20% or 15% when we were doing this experiment. And suddenly the whole ecosystem becomes very nervous, right? Especially the sales becomes very nervous because we have monthly targets and plans to meet. So we've not been able to do justice with this experiment, I'd say.
So, you know, are you able to stitch the full funnel? Because I would imagine if it's getting squeezed here, it'll be better downstream,
it just takes,
but you don't know.
It takes time, right? For this experiment, I'd say for us to conclude this properly, we would need 2 to 3 months. Because our look-to-book cycle is fairly long.
Sure.
Right? And it's just a matter of when are we willing to take that risk. But yes, we're on that journey. So whether it is exposing them to content first, or just a simple game which makes them realize what is important for them at this life stage. That's something that we want to do before.
You also mentioned offline about the fact that you've divided your customer base into a bunch of personas. And I wanted to understand, when you look at India as a market, there is diverse geographies, diverse income groups, diverse cultural groups. How do you break this down to a set of segments which become addressable? Because otherwise, it's just too overwhelming.
You know, the most easiest way to do it demographically. But when we realize
India, you cross over from there,
India, it is not possible to do demographically. Every state is like a country.
Pretty
every state behaves like a different country. So therefore, what we believe is demographically, you can work up to a certain extent, but it
only goes so far.
Hmm. You have to look at this customer at a psychographic level. You have to look at this customer at a mindset level. So a couple of years back, we did a huge study where we reached out to customers from across the geographies, across the mindsets and this thing, because we wanted to understand these customers at their aspiration level, their relationship with money, their relationship with risk, because we're in the business of risk, relationship with the risk, and to figure out how to segment it. And so it was a qualitative study backed by a quantitative study, because each segment we also wanted to quantify.
Fair.
Whether this segment relevant enough, big enough for us to go after it or not. What came out of that study, what we were able to do is the segment customers' basis mindsets. But to make it easier for us to understand, number one, and then for, as a marketer, for me to propagate it throughout the company and then take it to our advisors, we needed a much simpler and much relatable way to.
Sure.
I cannot say based on archetypes that this is that kind of this thing. So what we did was we classified these customers on the basis of animals.
Okay.
We called the project was also aptly called Project Safari.
Achha.
And we ultimately identified four sets. We divided the customer into four mindsets. The mindsets were lion, elephant, deer, and hawk. So it's a mix of animals and birds, if you will. Yeah. And each person, each persona had a different character. So let me give you an example.
Yeah.
An elephant is that kind of person who's fairly methodical, who does everything to the T, he thinks in advance, very well planned, that kind of a person. This person is aware of the risks in life and wants to be prepared for the risks, want to cover for the risks, but very sure of himself. What I'm doing is right. A lion is a person who probably is an elephant, but he also has that element in him that make me feel important.
Okay.
I will be methodical. I'm willing to take risks. Elephant will not take risks. This person will take risks. But you have to tell him or her that you are the best in the world. What you are doing is right. A hawk is the person who knows what way to go, but doesn't get too much into detail. This person would like to get specialist and tell them, this is what I want. Now up to you. Time to time, keep me updated what is happening. I'll keep a hawk's eye, but don't get me into nitty-gritties. As compared to an elephant, elephant would like to go into nitty-gritties.
Got it.
And the final one is
a
deer.
Right.
A deer is a person who's the most underconfident.
Okay.
This person says, main theek kar raha hu ki nahin, sab theek hoga ki nahin. Yeah, that kind of mindset. And therefore, the way to deal with all this person is, let me give you this thing through an example. Suppose you are selling a term product. If you are selling the term product to an elephant, it's only facts and figures. Aap itna doge, aapke family ko itna cover milega. Ye hai, this has been our claims ratio. This is the process. Yeah,
very objective.
And this is
selling.
When you are talking to a lion, you'll say, "Sir, aap bilkul theek kar rahe."
Interesting.
Ye jo aapne product choose kiya na, this is the best. Like what you have chosen this. You are
giving him his ego massage and then he's
a little
kind
bit
of more
ego.
Manageable.
Same product. Huh? You're selling the same product to both of this.
Yeah.
When you're talking to Hawkeye, aapko itna dena hai, itna milega. Don't worry, company will manage everything. Aapke paas saal mein statement aata rahega. Aapko koi bhi issue aap yahan call kar sakte.
Bilkul. That's what he needs to know.
That's what he needs. Dear, sir, theek product hai. Le lijiye. Kuch nahi hoga. Main hoon na. I will take care of
everything. He needs a lot of reassurance.
That reassurance. So same product. We have to. So this is how we classified. And this is. I've never seen any model like that.
You know, I'm very fascinated by this exercise. And I have two questions for you to follow up. One is, are you able to fit everybody into one of these four?
Yes.
By and large.
Yes.
And this means that elephants are found in North and South and East and West. It trespasses cultural boundaries.
It trespasses bound culturals. And that was the beauty of the study.
That's
it trespasses
amazing, right?
Geographies. It trespasses cultures and
genders.
No,
age brackets.
Same.
It's all
covered. Absolutely same.
Wow.
And when we did the quantification, most of them were upward of 20%. That means most of them. So India is equally divided into these segments.
That was going to be my next question.
There is no dominant segment.
It turns out we have as many deers as we have elephants.
What happens is anybody who starts the journey starts with a deer.
And so
over a period of time, as you get better in life, as you see success in life, you either go towards hawk or you go towards elephant or you go towards lion.
But I will stay where I end up. In some sense, if I'm a lion now, I'll stay a lion for a while.
It also depends on external condition.
Sure, of course.
If your experiments have been good, if what you have done in life has worked for you, then you'll stay a lion. It keeps on reinforcing. But if your decisions have gone wrong, probably you start going back to this thing.
Being a deer. Very fascinating. So in terms of same question related, that in terms of the input variables that determine this kind of an outcome, was this a lot of, let's say, data that you had which you crunched into these models which gave you this? Or no, was this more of a qualitative originated?
It is completely qualitative. In length meeting with customers across geographies, the study itself took more than a year for us to do.
But then how do you now map it to the audience?
Yes. So now that question was answered. We are able to segment.
Yeah.
Now, if I'm sitting with you right now, how do I know?
Exactly.
Whether you're an elephant or whether this thing, I don't know. So what we did is we developed a four-pointer questionnaire.
Okay.
And I ask you these four questions. Basis these four questions, I with 80% probability, I'll be able to determine what is the kind of customer you are in.
And okay? These four questions ask me what?
Fairly simple.
Achha.
Fairly simple questions that for me, money is this. There are four questions. It's an algorithm that we have designed.
High quality, high value research, and now suddenly it applies to everything you're doing.
Everything you're doing. Now, the problem that we face is convincing the distributor. I go back to distributor and said, aap pehle customer, aap Ankit se milne ja rahe ho, pehle ye char question. Char question ka output aapko aake malum pad gaya, okay, he's a liar. Same product, but change your pitch. Now, what happens is the distributors who have already been into the business for quite some time, they see with this a pinch of salt.
They would rather use their own judgment.
They say, I'm doing business, business hoga. So, that's the problem that we are facing right now. We are trying to figure out a solution. Second problem that we are facing is, how do I map this into the system so that when a customer is decided to approach us minus his advisor, his or her advisor, how am I able to change my communication according to the persona of the customer? It requires a lot of work. So, it is quite possible that suppose I have to send you a premium reminder.
Right.
Your renewal is coming. Do I change it according to the persona of the customer or do I make it standard? I don't know right now.
At this point, it will be an experiment to figure this out. But in some sense, the distributor currently is doing his own judgment of what to pitch and how to pitch.
Yeah.
Because which you don't necessarily know if it's scientific enough.
That is the best way. We're trying to bring some science into this art.
Yeah, but given
what we are doing is, we believe we have very good findings and we are able to classify. I am finding challenges in implementing this.
Right.
There are probably not many actionables that are coming out of it, that how do I do it on the ground?
Sure.
I'm trying to figure out a solution. I'm sure we'll figure out a solution.
Hmm.
What we are now doing as an experiment is trying to map it to the distributor. Because distributor is a much more engaged audience with. I have got a much more face time.
Will be elephants and lions and deers?
I mean, and that is hopeful, wishful thinking right now. We will convert and we will use these studies to map out our distributors.
Okay.
Once we know that this kind of distributors, and probably for distributors, the terminology might be a little different.
It might be different.
So let's think about this distributor is a lion.
Hmm.
I know this distributor ko kaise treat karna hai. That information would be fed to my sales team and said, this information, this distributor treat it like this. Now the problem is, my sales team might say, mujhe to malum hai. Because anecdotally, we know.
This from a...
But we need to institutionalize.
People lens, how many salespeople and how many distributors are we talking about? Just order of magnitude wise.
Oh. So as a company, we have close to 2,200 to 2,300 salespeople. And distributors, we have 65,000.
So 1:2x relationship generally? Or is this a hierarchical structure?
No, the 65,000 is total distributors. The overall,
active ones would be whatever.
Would be the active distributors will be close to 15,000-20,000. But these are just the distributors which I'm talking about, the individual agents. Then we have bank RMs, we have employees.
Just think about the fact that the digital journey is only 5% of the overall insurance industry, but there's a much larger world available outside. Having said that, it's a very, very interesting journey. This is your host Ankur signing off.